Welcome to the Bread and Cup podcast hosted by Corey and Shauna Burris. They are a former pastor, a college teacher, and Pacific Northwest coffee lovers. Mostly, they are Jesus followers who find themselves in lots of interesting conversations with non-Christians, former Christians, wondering Christians, and young adults from all kinds of backgrounds. And we want to invite you into those conversations. The Bread and Cup podcast is a place for real talk about the Bible, life, and what it takes to move beyond the easy answers. So let's grab a cup and join the conversation. Welcome to the very first Bread and Cup podcast. I'm Shauna.
And I'm Corey. And each week, you know, our show is called Bread and Cup. So we will introduce what's in our cup and what's in our bread, or what is our bread. This week, we had an awesome friend drop off some fresh cinnamon rolls, and so we're enjoying those. And because we are in the Pacific Northwest, we are enjoying a Starbucks Veranda Blend coffee, which is in our backyard. And I'm not a big Starbucks fan typically, but this is actually pretty good for Starbucks.
Yeah, it's a blonde roast, and we tend to like that at Starbucks. If we're drinking Starbucks, we're typically drinking their blonde, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so today, as we enjoy cinnamon rolls as our bread and Starbucks as our cup, we're going to talk a little bit about who we are as Corey and Shauna and how Bread and Cup came to be.
Yeah. It's been an interesting journey. A little bit about us from our past that kind of has led to where we are right now and why we started a podcast, why we think it's, why we discuss the things that we do was, we met in Bible college, which many Christians have, right? Like most people that grew up in evangelical church, a lot of them went to Bible colleges or went to Christian Bible colleges. We were the typical, couple where I was a youth pastor or a pastoral major, and you were Shauna was a music major.
I was a church music major. Yes. Like, a full disclaimer, one of our children is exceptionally musically gifted, which I think back affirms the fact that I tried to do that. I am not a musician.
I don't think that's totally true, but that's the way.
I'm good on stage.
Right. So, yeah. But we grew up, I grew up in a Christian family. I grew up my entire life, grew up in the church, different types of church. I went Baptist, Assemblies of God, and everything in between, non-denominational. Yeah. And so I had always grown up in the church. One unique thing about me though, like I think I had opportunity to have people around me where I could ask questions. Mm-hmm. And I asked a lot of questions of people. I remember sitting down with a pastoral friend of mine. My family was moving, and so I lived with them for a couple of months, and I would ask him the most stupid questions. I'm sure he rolled his eyes later about what a high school student asked, but I had questions about everything from like, what does this mean? Why is this say this? What is God angry? What is this going? And sometimes he had answers, and some of those I still hold to, and some of them I maybe have challenged a little bit since then, but it was really great to have somebody that would listen to me throughout my entire life. And so I brought that into college, and I remember having discussions with people in college about that. So
yeah, this type of discussion I think is one of the hallmarks of who you and I are as a couple, right? So we met, right. We started dating. We say we started dating. We didn't actually elect that. Our friends took pity on us and told us we were dating each other. And I have to say they nailed it. It worked out great, forever eternally grateful to them for sort of pushing us towards each other. I love being married to you. We have an awesome life. And I think the first time I realized that I liked you was because of a deep discussion. We stood on the bridge.
Yep. In Minneapolis.
Minneapolis, the Stone Arch Bridge. And we started talking, and all of our friends just left us there. And we talked for well over an hour. And that to me is, it's such a high value. It's what drew me to you in the first place. And I have the opposite sort of story from you, right? My parents were not Christians when I was born, and certainly not up until the time I was in school when my father is still an atheist. He is a scientist. He's brilliant, and he very much values sort of creative thinking, higher order thinking. And so my mom became a Christian in the midst of my parents' dissolution. And so I had this sort of interesting upbringing where—
For those of you who don't know, a dissolutionment is a divorce.
I hate the word divorce. I hate even saying it. And so, yeah, I walk around it. But so my mom, she was also always very willing to embrace my questions, although I think I had more than she ever knew what to do with. But she and my dad worked really hard to make sure that both of them had voice, that I respected and loved both of them. I knew that they each cared very much about me. And so my mom really fed my faith. She took me to church. She, you know, she modeled what it looked like to be someone who becoming a Christian in their 30s and discovering what Jesus was about. And then my dad was and remains the sort of the opposite perspective. He would challenge me on, well, why do you think that way? Don't you know the Bible is X, Y, and Z? Don't you understand that out in the big, wide, real world, that principle or that perspective? So while I was raised almost entirely in an Assembly of God environment, which is a, you know, evangelical, pretty conservative, especially in the small town I grew up in the Midwest, you know, absolutely no drinking. You wouldn't even say, spell H-E-L-L. You would say H-E-double hockey sticks, right? Like it there could have been an element of legalism there. And I think some of my peers, my cohort that were raised in that church, they might say that that's how they experienced it. I did not. I found that environment to be really encouraging. People were kind to our family, despite being sort of a strange, you know, single mom household that wasn't that typical in evangelical churches in the 80s. But my dad would push me. Everything that the church taught me, he would force me to defend from a very scientific, genuinely high school level debate team perspective. And so what that did is meant that I had to think critically about my faith when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. And I still highly value thinking critically about my faith and frankly about everything. And yeah. It's,
and we brought that into our marriage together, and we've been married 22 years now, almost.
Yeah.
And
June.
Yep.
And we have three kids.
We have three kids, and we even now will debate things even between each other, even with your dad or with even our family. And we've talked with people in church. And I say debate, we don't mean it as in like we fight about it, but we have discussions and we challenge in each other and we lean in. And so I was a pastor for about two and a half years, something like that.
Which means I was married to a pastor for 2.5 years.
And so we had the experience of being in a young church at the time, and we had a lot of good and bad that came out of that. Mm-hmm. But have served in a heavy capacity within the church for most of our marriage.
And off and on, honestly, as we've wrestled through things, as we've gone through phases of life, you know, careers have developed or not developed, children have been born and you know, some of those things. That's ebbed and flowed. We have not been in paid pastoral role now in 17 years, but we are definitely finding ourselves in more and more pastoral conversations,
right?
Which is part of what has led to Bread and Cup. We're having all these fantastic, critically thinking, but somewhat pastoral feeling conversations.
And you, with your background in and your recent master's in education and teaching in college and some of those things, brings in like, I know you love to learn. You loved, I mean, I we do. Listen, we're nerds, okay? So we'll listen to podcasts all the time. We listen to I'll listen to sermons. We'll read spiritual books, you know, even not spiritual books, but books that challenge you in the way that you think. And so we, at least I personally, I found myself, people that when we were youth leaders that are now in high school or out of high school, in college age, or even early in their marriage or whatnot, they will come to me and they'll be like, hey, I have been thinking about this. And they'll ask some big question while we sit there and drink a beer or have a coffee or whatever together. Yeah. And
to our Assembly of God friends. Right. By the way, we're four square now, so we totally do drink a beer over these conversations.
So we, you know, well, you know, we'll be sitting there, have a conversation, and they'll ask a big question like, well, I've always felt this way, but not felt like I could ask anybody, but you seem like it's okay for me to say something about it. And I'll be like, okay, well, let's talk about that. You know, why do you feel that way? Where are you going with that? And I think that you and I have asked a lot of those questions of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I know some of the things, my faith has evolved, if you will, over time. And as I understand more and I become more secure in my faith, I'm willing to to explore more of what my faith means to me. Now, I also hold really solidly to these certain principles, and that's important to me because I think that is part of faith, right?
Well, but, I think for both of us, we've wrestled off and on. I mean, I don't know where you're at in your faith journey, because we don't always end up agreeing on everything. And thankfully, we agree on the finest points of it. But, you know, for me, there's been seasons where I've really forced myself to struggle with the ideas of, well, is the Bible trustworthy? Was Jesus a real person? And if he was he the way I thought he was? And in those questions, coming to the place where there's a few things that I feel really sure about, and they're the reason I'm willing to have faith, or that I could say that I'm a person of faith or that I'm a Christian. But in those wrestlings, I've come up against a whole lot of things where I've had to say, I think I understand that. I'm comfortable with where I'm sitting, but I know I have a lot of room to go. And then there's some things where I'm just, yeah, I really just don't even know about that. But I know enough about the core things. There's enough that I trust about what I do know that I'm willing to leave some things pretty nebulous as long as I'm continuing to learn about them. And there are such brilliant people out there that know so much more than either of us. And I just keep picking up the books and I keep having the conversations. And, you know, you referenced I've had 6 graduating classes now come through. So it's been 5 years that I've had the privilege of teaching at a small college. And it is the greatest joy of my life to stand in front of a classroom of, you know, early 20 somethings who they're in a program that is faith-based. So there's some shared understanding there. And then to sort of explode their preconceived concepts and then walk with them as we figure out, as we wrestle through those hard conversations, and as we, as someone further down the road from them, I've lived through so much of where they are and where they're going, to be able to sort of not say that I'm ahead of them, but to sit down next to them and say, okay, I've absolutely walked this road. That hurt, that struggle, that frustration. I feel you. And not give them a pat answer, but be able to have a conversation about, well, what are you feeling and what are you hoping for? And then sharing a little bit about what I was hoping and feeling in the similar situation, not to solve their problem or give them an answer, but to invite them a little further along on the journey than maybe they would have gotten without those hard conversations.
And I think that's the big piece, is the conversation, right? Listening and hearing what people have to say. And I think so many people have felt cut off by either other people, other Christians, believers, non-believers across the board, and feel like they can't come out and say, I feel this way, and I'm struggling with this, and I'm wondering about this. They feel like they're either told, well, no, sorry, that's just the wrong way to think, and they don't know what to do. And so opening up the door of conversation is what we're trying to do, right? I'm sure you will hear this story, but I had a really good friend of mine, and he said to me one time, I'm struggling with this, 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 and this, and I said, that's great. And he was like, what? And I was like, yeah, because I think that we have to wrestle through this to understand what we are and where we're going to end on the other side. And I think, you know, the idea of conversation is part of where we get the name Bread and Cup, which is about this idea of so much, you know, the reason there's a Food Network out there, the reason that there's all these travel shows just show food on them, is because so much happens when you sit down with the bread and cup. And yes, there's the parallel to communion.
Yeah,
and there's the parallel, which we find to be very, such a core piece of our faith.
Right.
But also there's an element of so much is when you share food and drink together, so much more is shared with each other, right? You're more willing to sit there for a long period of time and talk with the person across from you.
It's about inviting, you know, for us, so many of these conversations actually happen at our breakfast nook table, right? Or our kitchen table. And I bake the things and you make the coffee and we share them. There's something welcoming and lingering. Exactly. When you're sharing a meal, there's a lingering aspect. We're not here to answer a question and shuffle out the door. We're here to wrestle on the journey with you, and we're going to eat and we're going to drink with you. And in our lives, that also means communion, because we are Christians, but we don't expect that the bread and the cup we share with the person in front of us is communion for them.
Right.
Because the richest and the best conversations happen when we don't have identical perspectives. But both sides are valid and both sides are important. And I love the conversations when people feel free to be wholly honest about what they're struggling with or what they hate about what they think I believe.
And this is an opportunity for us and for you to hear a Christian perspective on big topics. There is always this ongoing dialogue of what does faith mean to us and how does it live out in our lives? It is just kind of how we have wrestled with our faith, wrestled through what we believe, raised our kids, all of those things. We thought we would just kind of open the door, open a conversation with those of you out there that are willing to listen. So,
yeah, I think that's exactly it. We are growing people. We are not fully formed. We are definitely not perfect. But we were raised to be Christians, and then we wrestled through that and wrestled hard with it in some years and circumstances. And we came out on the other side with a different view than what we entered. And I think that makes these conversations interesting, because we understand what's happening in the church sphere. And if you are an active Christian and you are participating in your local congregation, we get that. And if you are someone who was raised in faith and you decided that you just walked away from it, that you could not understand or engage with or accept some of the things that were being told to you were part of the Christian faith or the way that you read the Bible, and you walked away, we get that. And we want to talk about those things in a way that isn't just leaning into pat answers. We are not going to throw a single Bible verse at you and say, see, this is why we're right about much.
You even said, coming out the other side.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I've come out the other side as much as I'm in the woods and I came to an area where I could see the sun a little bit, and now I'm going back into the woods at times, right? Like,
fair.
Not on everything, right? And I think that is, I mean, kind of what we want to talk about even today is this idea that there are certain things that we need to hold on to and understand and grasp and grapple with.
Yeah.
But like, we wrestle with our faith and we wrestle with a day-to-day life. We're trying to figure this whole thing out. And while there are truths, the truth is out there, if you will, there are a lot of things that it is okay to not know.
Yeah. And I think I love your analogy of the forest, because obviously being a couple, we have navigated that forest together a lot of the time, but not always at the same spot. Like, you've been deeper in that forest where I feel like I'm standing more in the sun. And there was a time where I certainly stopped trusting sort of the compass, if we're going to stick to the adventure analogy. I just wasn't sure that I trusted the compass. It seemed rusty and broken and unuseful. And for me, the biggest part of the reason, I guess, I use the language of coming out the other side is, you're right, we are absolutely not out of the woods. And some of the things we've experienced just in the last 2 years were dark and heavy and certainly uncomfortable. But the difference for me in those experiences was that I wasn't trusting a story I'd been told. I wasn't trusting my own good efforts to get gold shiny stars within sort of our church environment. I had reached a place where I absolutely just trusted the character of God, who Jesus says he is. And I didn't know where I landed about a lot of the other stuff. But once I reached the place where I'm like, no, there has been too much evidence in my life and in the lives of the people that you and I have, befriended and been involved with over the years, there's too much evidence that Jesus is who he says he is, and that he is actually worth modeling my life after and worth, pursuing and finding. even if I do that really imperfectly. And so for me, that's sort of it. Yes, the woods, but it's that idea of, I think I know how my compass works, and I'm trusting the direction it's giving me. And I don't always know what else is going on.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's ultimately faith. Like, I'm with you. I'm in the woods on some things even today,
yeah.
And I'm out of the woods on other things, and in a kind of an open area. And I think I have a good grasp of it. But as history has served and taught me, I look back at myself where I was 10 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it is. And I go, man, if I looked at myself today, I would think I was a bad Christian, or I would think I was a different type of person than I actually am. And so I think the point is that it's okay to live in that place, in that it be in the woods at times on things, but there is a compass, right?
Yeah.
Like, there is a true north, and me not being able to see what true north is doesn't make true north not exist.
Totally.
Right? And I think that, I mean, one thing that you probably will hear as we continue to talk about topics and any discussion that we have is that there are things that we must hold on to. And one of those is faith, right?
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about, I mean, you and I talk a lot about this is, I think the church in many ways taught us to have faith of something happening, the Bible, right? Like, have faith that the Bible is truth, that it is infallible, that it is all of those things.
And that heaven is coming. That was a big one that we grew up in.
Yeah, or you know, all, like, I mean, if you think of all the doctrine within the church and within our, you know, within kind of the culture that is the church, there are a lot of things that we are taught to just believe. And we are told that that is what faith is.
Yeah.
And I've as I get older, I start going, I don't know that that's what faith is. What faith is trust in something.
Yeah.
Trust in someone, in this case, Jesus, right?
Right.
And who God is. We trust that he is who he says he is.
Yeah.
That there is truth, that the Bible is truth, right?
Yeah.
And that's different than trusting of something. And it starts transitioning whether or not you want to believe that there was a guy that got swallowed by a whale and that that's what you're going to hold on to. And whether or not they found Noah's Ark at the top of a mountain, you know, in the Middle East, and how if that isn't true, then Noah's Ark never happened. And so there's no point to all of these words.
Right.
Or if you have faith in who God and Jesus are and who they have taught us to be and what that means for our lives. And I think there's a difference in those things.
I mean, there's certainly, well, again, we've taken so much of this journey together that we're naturally going to agree. Although in fairness to the people we're in this conversation with, we don't actually agree on everything.
No.
And that's okay, because we're both standing in a place where we know that we are Christians. We do follow Jesus. We do believe the Bible is true. And we also both happen to believe that, that when we start at that place, that we get to wrestle out the rest of it. And that's just part of discovery. And I think when I try to explain what the faith journey feels like from my side of things, because I agree with you that if the Shauna from 10 years ago would see the Shauna today, she might be surprised by who I am. Hopefully in some good ways, like, yay, still fit in my jeans, and maybe in some not so great ways where she does feel like maybe I've neglected something that really mattered to her. But I see that in our relationship, right? Like when we became a couple, we had really specific ideas of how life was going to unfold and the kind of, you know, our dreams and our plans. And, you know, thankfully we had great people around us. So we knew that we needed to be in alignment, right? We needed to have a shared set of values and beliefs and hopes and goals so that we could move forward as a, you know, cohesive unit. But that it took us all of 2 years of being married before our cute little plan was out the window. And maybe it was 4, but it did not take long before we started to realize that, oh man, yeah, it was so great for us to value this and value that and think this is wonderful. But we reached a point where we had to decide what it was that we were actually in that for. And we decided we were in it for each other. And that discovery was going to have to be part of it because neither of us were static. And that's been so useful for me because I trust you and I love you. And we've had such a fun, interesting, you know, marriage that for me, that's a little piece to hang on to of when I begin to wrestle with the faith part of it, I can see, oh, that's actually okay. It's okay to wrestle with some of that stuff that I read in the Bible or some of the ways that I see the church behaving, because there are things that aren't great and we can acknowledge that and then move past it. Or there's the joy and the hope of like that discovery of, oh, who you are today, Corey, is way different than the Corey I started dating. But some of that's the fun. Like that'd be so boring.
Right.
If you were a static creature in that sense, right? You're not made of stone or wood. You are a living person who changes and grows and changes your mind about things and learns new things. And I want to approach faith in the same way that as I'm changing, and while the Bible talks about God is the same yesterday, today, and forever, that he is unchanging, that he is reliable and trustworthy, that when we, you know, print that out and put a needle stitch of that on our needle cross point, needle stitch, I can't figure that out. Here we go. Needle
point.
We
aren't old enough to be doing needle point or whatever. Or hipster enough.
Yeah. Well, we're neither. If I hire someone to make us a letter art of that statement, it's not true. It just doesn't get the whole.
Yeah.
And so for me, there's actually a comfort in the idea that just like we're inviting people into this conversation, God invites me into a conversation. Like it's not a test. I'm not showing up to the table to make sure that I know which bubble to fill in and I better get the most right. It's no, we're having a conversation with some push and some pull and some discovery.
Yeah. And I think that kind of encompasses it, this idea that for a long time, people viewed belief and faith as not relational. And we always talk about, oh, it's about a personal relationship with Jesus and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But sometimes that becomes a cop-out, I think, in some ways, in the way that we view our relationship. But there's a lot of truth in the concept of that.
Sure.
And that is that relationships, there is a flow to them in a sense. And I think that a lot of ways our relationship with God, it's us discovering more and more and more about him and who his character is and who he is, and us going, I'm going to trust into that. I'm going to invest into that. I'm willing to dive into that piece of my relationship with him.
Yeah.
Whereas you may not even known that you needed to do that before.
Yeah.
And so,
That's been so true for us.
Yeah. And so
things that we've wrestled with that like weren't like they weren't even on our radar.
Yeah.
Like as a thought process, let alone something worth actually wrestling through that now, I mean, we have struggled and thought and, you know, had deep discussion, and maybe some of those things aren't even 100% settled.
Yeah.
But I think that what I love about the place we're in at this moment is that we've done a fair amount of the hard work. And while we are nowhere near the end of it, we're still discovering ourselves. What seems to happen when we're having these conversations, you know, I'm sitting in front of a young woman who's, you know, asking me about, well, what do I do about this situation, right? Or how do I know what I'm supposed to do for my job, right? That's just a big question for anyone in their 20s. But certainly in the Christian circles, that becomes, how do I know what I'm called to? There's this language attached to it that feels almost burdensome. And you know, certainly for our friends and the young adults that that we're, you know, mentors to or whatever. I don't know what language to use there, but however they end up in our lives that aren't Christians or have stopped being Christians, they might not say called, but they certainly still ask the same thing. Like, well, how do you know what I'm supposed to know?
Right? Where like, I'm supposed to be.
And how do you know what you don't know? And how do you make, and I think the beauty of the place that you and I are in is that we've done some of the hard work of struggling through it. And so there is a comfort in saying, you know what? I'm not actually 100% sure, but I feel sure enough about how to have this conversation that I'm willing to keep talking to you about it. So yeah. I don't necessarily know the answer to your conundrum. Wow, that was a weird old word, huh? Conundrum. I don't necessarily, yeah.
I don't think it's an old word.
No? Okay, good.
Just a word.
We're going to pull it back out. I don't necessarily know the answer to that, but man, am I familiar with the idea of taking this idea and figuring out, well, what's in that? Like, what are we actually asking when we ask that question? And so I'm really excited to hear more of those. I always love these conversations. I get to have at least a couple a week, and it's my favorite to hear people, you know, processing what they believe about themselves and what they believe about the world. And
well, and I had a conversation with somebody actually the other day, and it was a couple weeks ago now, but he and I were sitting down and we were talking, and we do this pretty regularly. And one of the things he said to me was, hey, I have a question for you. And he was talking about, I think we were talking about end times or something along those lines. And he just said, hey, you know, here's my question. Here's what I think. And he goes, I put it out there that I was wrestling with this idea or this thought.
Yeah.
And he had people like coming around him from church or from wherever, like people that were influenced, that were his age, that influenced his life in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, how can you doubt, or how can you have a different point of view on this than other things? Yeah. And he was like, so what do you think? And I was like, I want to be honest with you. I have no idea. And I'm okay with that. And I think that is ultimately what we don't accept a lot of times within church and faith communities, is this idea that, I don't know, like, it's okay to not know.
Well, the answer you do know. I mean, you don't.
Well, I have a
you
formed opinion.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, I mean, there's a lot of things that you and I talk about and in terms of things that the church wrestles with and people individually wrestle with and you know, politics wrestles with that becomes this thing where we all have these definitive answers and we stick our post in the ground and we're like, I know what this is and how dare you come against it. And as I get older, I start going, you know, I think I know what it is and I feel pretty sure about this.
Yeah.
But I don't know exactly how that all is going to play out, because I used to think this thing over here. I was in Bible college, and I remember that. I know you were there.
I was there.
And I remember sitting in a hallway, and I don't remember what we were talking about. It was something like really boring, like transubstantiation or something like that.
Yeah, let's never talk about that.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, we're never going to again. But while we were sitting there talking about it, the one person piped up that he knew exactly how it was going to work, and exactly what it looked. And everybody else was like, "Well, that's stupid." And we got in this heated argument and debate because you know it.
And to be clear, the person who knew was not the professor.
No.
With a doctorate in theology.
This was a nerdy kid that
was like a 19-year-old punk.
Yeah. So all of us 19-year-olds knew everything that we had to know about transubstantiation and what that was, what it meant, what it
That's
and
so great.
So much so that he walked out, stormed out, because most of us disagreed with his kind of point of view on it.
Wow.
And I think that that happens a lot of times in our own lives where we wrestle with these things and one idea loses out over another and I'm going to use an old person saying, we throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? Yeah. Like we throw it all out the window because we wrestle with this idea, and instead of us going, man, I can't land on what this looks like, but I know God is. We aren't willing to do that, right? It's like, well, God is so connected to our belief, whatever that happens to be, that if we can't accept that belief, then we throw him out with it.
Yeah.
We throw out who Jesus was. We throw out what the Bible is. You know,
yeah.
There's discussions, and we'll have talk about this in the future. But like, the Bible is truth. It is infallible, and yet. But we aren't,
yeah.
And we can interpret it wrong,
yeah.
And we can misunderstand what God's trying to say in it.
Yeah.
And instead of us going, man, maybe I just don't get this right now, and I need to sit that to the side and wrestle with this now and go back into the forest, we go,
whole thing must be wrong.
Yeah, the whole thing, I'm out. This whole thing, I'm just going to burn the whole place down.
Yeah.
And I think that it is a dangerous thing and something that I've been tempted to do.
Totally.
I have had times where I'm like, I don't get this, you know?
Yeah. And those things can feel, I mean, especially there's been a few things we've wrestled with that were sort of easily.